Hey, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Mission Matters. My name is Adam Torres, and if you'd like to apply to be a guest in the show, just head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to Apply. All right, so today is a very special episode. We brought Arthur Cavazos on the line. He's COO of Digital Fusion Consulting Group, and I'm proud to announce he's an upcoming author in our Mission Matters best-selling business leaders book series. Hey, Arthur, first off, just want to say I know we've been trying to get together for a long time, man. I'm glad you finally made time for us. Welcome onto the show.
Hey, thank you, Adam. It's such a pleasure to be a part of the show, and I'm looking forward to this session. So thank you for your time as well.
Fantastic. So, Arthur, looking forward to getting into your career and getting into, of course, Digital Fusion Consulting Group. And we'll also do a little bit of book discussion today for everybody watching, just to know we're going to be bringing Arthur back onto the show when the book is live. So we'll do a deep dive into his writing then as well. But before we get into all of this, we'll start this episode the way that we start them all, with what we like to call our Mission Matters Minute. So, Arthur, we at Mission Matters, we amplify stories for entrepreneurs, executives, and experts. That's our mission. Arthur, what mission matters to you?
Adam, thank you for that great introduction. And I'll keep it in the same vein in conversation. We want to amplify success for our clients through digital and obviously the all of the consulting platforms that exist. We want to share expertise that we bring to the table. We want to deliver client success. That's paramount. Solving client problems is key. And then the fourth pillar to our strategy is a long-term partnering collaboration, which, you know, once we partner with you, we want to stay in the loop from start to finish. So we don't do a one-time project with you. We want to be a sounding board as we go forward.
Love bringing mission-based our authors on the line and entrepreneurs, and really having them share their mission, what they stand for, and what gets them motivated to get out there and to make a difference. So great having you on.
Thank you.
And I guess just to get us kicked off here, like, where did everything start for you? How did you start in business?
You know, Adam, I grew up in a family where my parents had have always owned their own business, and so I was the tag along, and being the youngest of five. And I had the privilege, I can now say it's a privilege to have been in front of what they do, how they did it, what was said. And I was like a sponge and still am. They had to run me off because I was so inquisitive sometimes. I'd get into things that I shouldn't have as a child. But as I grew older, I became a contributing member of helping. And so that's in my DNA. I have obviously adopted the strategies and the things, the philosophies that they hold in business. And I've even gone to through not only helping, working for or with companies, but I have owned an entity or two, or have been a partner in many entities as well. It created a skill set of innovation that obviously you possess and many of us possess that are in business for ourselves. I went to work for large corporations that have taught me a lot. I have tested many of the theories that we bring to the table, and I learned on what I call OPM, other people's money. So we bring that to the table. And the most important piece of that, Adam, in my background is I soon learned that understanding what you read and the things that you study to sharpen your skills and sharpen the saw is absolutely important, but that doesn't make you the expert voice. So a surgeon doesn't learn by the textbook. He learns by practical knowledge. We as a group and I have learned that practicality and experience is absolutely imperative. So we bring that to the table as well, Adam. That's a little about me.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. And I like to stick in those early years a little bit longer, especially whenever I hear that somebody grew up in an entrepreneurial household. I'm just always curious, like, what was it like around the dinner table in those entrepreneur talks, or whether it was holidays or dinner tables, but like wherever those moments of learning were kind of handed down. For me, I grew up in an entrepreneur household. My dad was an entrepreneur. I always remember around the dinner table, like kind of listening to him talking to, you know, other adults and things like that, and picking up things. Like, how did that all take place for you? Like, how did that knowledge get over to you?
oh my gosh, it was never ending for us, Adam. The conversations were typically about, do this, do that. We had to step up as children, clean your room, do the things that we did as kids. But conversations that adults would take, right? Again, I was the youngest of five. We're all geared towards, what next? Where are you going next? Who are you talking to? What's happening with X employee, Y employee, Z employee? And then what's the next move? This didn't work. This failed. Or they were talking about the successes in their business, whatever that was, when things were going great. Obviously, the 70, 80 percentile of conversations were in the positive light. And the 20 or 30% that were in the negative light, it allowed me the opportunity to focus on the gaps. And so as a child, an adult will bring you a problem. And as a child, in your childish mind, you certainly will start solving problems in the capacity of that you have at that time. So I brought that forth. And today I'm proud to say that I'm not uncomfortable living in the gap.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love hearing that. Hearing that, and especially when people are brought up in that entrepreneur household, I feel like, sometimes for some of those that weren't brought up in that entrepreneur household, and because you've worked with so many different entrepreneurs, I have to ask the age old question: is this idea of entrepreneurship, is it something that you just have in you, or can it be taught? Like, what's your view on that one?
I'm going to say that it can be taught, but it has to be taught at an early age. You've got to establish the foundations, not be afraid to move forward. And I'll tell you a short story, Adam. My parents gave me the confidence up until the age of me turning about 26, many moons ago. And they gave me the confidence that I could move forward in any direction, knowing that if I faltered or failed in any way, that they would have my back. That gave me confidence to know that it didn't matter what I did. They were going to fix it. They were fixers. They were gap closers, which is what I came to be. So I believe that if you bring it forth early enough, that you can certainly groom people to do what is needed, right? You learn the foundation. You take risks. Obviously, that's part of being an entrepreneur. We live in that. And then we make sure that we have the confidence that if we falter, that first you've got to know that you can survive. And two, that you learn from everything that wasn't successful in your mind. Yeah.
So now you obviously fast forward a bit. You graduate now at some point. I should say graduate, but you transition at some point to traditional corporate American big companies. What was that process like for you? Like kind of juxtaposing your previous experience to big business.
That's a great question. The structure that exists, me coming from an environment of very quick decision making. It's like a speedboat. You're in a speedboat. You can go get from one to another, and then you join this conglomerate. Fortune 50s, Fortune 5s that I was a part of, and now you're on a tanker. Try to turn a tanker like a speedboat. You can't do it with one man, and it'll take you an hour to take it, a 90-degree turn. So good luck with that. But it certainly taught me that there are different levels and structures. The same level of what gets you to the first grade is not the same thing that gets you to the 12th grade or to the PhD level. You learn the concepts. I learned those concepts in business. We try to attract, clients that understand those levels of concepts. Some people are experts in conversation in a lot of different topics. Some people, are very muted and, they bring lots of knowledge, to the table because they're well read. And then you get that hybrid, the entrepreneur that, has a lot of experience in many different areas and they're also well read. And so they're constantly validating. We are constantly validating the knowledge of the forever changing business world that we live in. So that's part of what makes us who we are, Adam.
Yeah. Talk a little bit more about just maybe some of the, as you start getting into this, into this corporate America. Was that like, how did you deal with it? Obviously you could see what happened, but like, how did you deal with that change? Was that easy for you or was it different? And I'll tell you, on my end, it was, I have a very similar experience as yourself. And when I started working for these large financial companies, I was just shocked. And I'm like, well, why can't we just do it? Like, I had a bit of a problem with it personally. I had trouble transitioning, like why things just couldn't like happen how I was used to them happening. Like, how did you deal with that?
You know, that's a great question. The idea is that I had to learn a different skill set, and that was me selling the idea to someone else without asking for it. And so it was a skill set that you continue to ask the questions, and eventually they come up with the right answer. The right answer is the answer that you wanted to ask to begin with, or wanted them to answer to begin with. So once they achieve that, then it becomes their idea. A lot of people live in that, and a lot of people don't accept, you know, the new guy or the consultant, if you will, to come in and show them how to take care of their baby. They know best. So if you continue to trigger thought ideas continue to put suggestions on the table, they'll eventually pick up the right thing, and then you move forward. I learned very quickly. I went to work for a company called Texas Instruments early in my career, and they announced that there was going to be a closure of the facility that I was in, along with many others. They were consolidating our facility into Austin and splitting up part of it and going to Dallas, Texas. And so, you know, me being the new guy on the team, fresh blood, I asked the question, well, what are we doing for ourselves? Are we just going to sit back and let that happen? And so I took on the venture to go ask my boss to say, hey, I've got an idea. What do you think of this? Long story short, we went in and did a presentation for Jerry Junkins at the time. And we pitched the idea of going out and getting additional business. Well, that had never been done from the level and the likes of us in a small in Lubbock, Texas. And so to our pleasant surprise, Jerry Junkins adopted the idea. We showed him how we would fund the project. You know, the fact that we didn't have a budget for it obviously was a concern. But we showed him the pathway of how we would fund that. And even before green was green, you know, as we know it today, we took what was called scrap at that time and regrind in the plastics division. And we were selling it to cement companies as filler because it became cheaper than sand. And so they were buying that from us, which funded the project. We landed several multi-million dollar projects. We ended up not saving the entire entity. And they still ended up moving the business, but that new business, the newfound business, went with them. So the interesting part of that, and to bring closure to your question, Adam, is that you can't be afraid to ask questions regardless of the size of the company. You've got to continuously ask questions, because at the root of all, regardless of the size of the entity, they are real people.
Yeah.
And that's what drives me.
At what point did this idea of really creating like continuous improvement in culture, at what point did that kind of take root? Was that something that was kind of like an epiphany, or did it germinate over time? Like, how did that take place for you?
Absolutely, Adam. And it did germinate over time. People have asked me historically, how did you pick this industry? The reality to it, and the honest answer is that I didn't pick this industry. It picked me. DNA. There is not an issue that will hit the table that I can't help, and my team can't help be a solution to the table. We live in the gap. We're comfortable in the gap. We continue to ask questions until we get to higher ground. And so, to answer your question, Adam, my background and the things that I do today certainly have been defined by the paths that I've taken, the opportunities that have been given to me. And the things that I now see of value, we can bring lots of solutions to the table. And now that I know, you know, where we stand in the gap, we live in the gap, and we're comfortable there. Well, we can certainly save a lot of people a lot of time, a lot of heartache and effort to ensure that we get you from point A to point Z rather quickly.
So maybe let's take a moment or two and tell us a little bit more about Digital Fusion Consulting Group before we go further, so people know a little bit more about what you do.
Adam, you know, we came up, as you can imagine, kind of the name Digital Fusion Consulting Group. You know, we are really intertwining the digital aspect of what we face today. As we know, AI is huge. And there are tools that are being developed as we speak. And today you see a complete list that's going to be completely remodeled tomorrow. So you've just got to stay at the cutting edge of what that is. Now, staying relative to what you do is critically important as well. So if there is a client that that is in the industry of X, Y, or Z, you focus your efforts to learn the detail of current events. Again, business is business. Whether you sell a widget of A category or B category, it's still a widget. And so the basic principles of selling apply to all industries, just as the basic business principles of business apply as well. So the ideas go on, our effort is to continue to learn, polish our skill set, learn more about what the customer is needing. Knowing what changes are taking play, knowing that everything is contingent upon people's behavior, talent management, globalization of trends and trade uncertainties that hit us day in and day out, the sustainability, the social responsibility that we have. You know, everything is social now, and there's impacts and ramifications that come with that. So understanding how to protect and preserve your own organization in that regard is critically important as well. And then probably one of the most important is having the agility and the adaptability to go through and adjust your sales to the storms that will blow over. Yeah. If you adjust them appropriately, you can get up and down and out of harm's way pretty quick. If you don't, then you're probably going to take on damage. So we want to make sure that our client base as an entity understands that you do not have to run through the school of hard knocks to get you to higher ground.
Yeah. And so looking at, and I know this will be different, by the way, for every business and everybody that you help, because size of business, industry, leadership team, obviously that varies, right? But when you first go into a company, are there certain kind of themes that tend to kind of pop up like time after time? Or are there certain things that you're like, okay, like this is where we start. Is there certain themes that come up?
Yes, it's always tied to people. It's mm-hmm. always tied to processes, and it's always tied to metrics, right? Mm-hmm. So it's absolutely imperative that we all understand that, what is your level of standardization? You know, are you having problems because people are not reading off the same sheet of music? You know, how do you create music if you don't have the music in front of you? You're just trying to get people to step in and improvise? That doesn't get you to higher ground. So standardization is what we look for. Learning to understand what the gaps are within the organization, right? What are the gaps? Only those that are at the table can typically tell you. The unfortunate part is that they're not always correct, because it's all relative and a perspective that they hold based on what they are a part of. So the CEO, the COO, the CFO, the executive management team has a perspective that may be right from their end, and they may hold a piece of the puzzle that's important. But so do the people that are doing the work. Their perspective is a completely different perspective at times. So it's important to understand those gaps. And then everybody has to buy into that so that we can not only get the starting point, but obviously go through the finish line with success. Servant leadership, you look for that. You know, many organizations will lead with an iron fist, and it creates problems all in of its own. And so we want to make sure that we identify that there are people who are disruptors. There are people who are contributors. Who are the disruptors in the organization? And it's important to identify them. Are they being disruptors because that's their will, or is it because they're lacking skill? Will or skill, where is it? And we identify that. Developing strong teams as a vein into that is to ensure that you have the right butts in the right seat. If driving efficiencies comes through people and making sure that people that are a part of the team, that they, if they don't bring the skill set, that you have the time and the bandwidth to teach them. If you don't, then you better hire the skill set and bring in the skill set needed to that gets you to higher ground. If you have the time to train, then certainly that is the best way to organically grow the talent from within. But you're looking to drive efficiencies. We're looking for that, improving processes that have a disconnect or have gaps, creating a culture of continuous improvement. It drives from a lot of different things, Adam. And then, you know, we typically will run in, and the most important part is to establish a connection at all levels. Mm-hmm. That I feel comfortable telling you what they know. 99.99% of all times, the answers come from them. Yeah. It's just knowing how to unlock those questions and those answers with pointed questioning. So. Mm-hmm.
And let's talk a little bit more about like getting like execution and getting some of this stuff like actually adopted. One thing to kind of talk about it, but another thing to make sure, you know, over time that it's implemented and that it actually does move the needle in the business and whatever the objective is that they were looking to accomplish. So how does that piece of this work?
You know, Adam, taking best practice is where that steps in, right? Is understanding that there is a best practice in what you do or what they do. And understanding what that is. So identifying examples of how you can use best practice and see how you can adopt best practice. It's one of many strategies that you can use. You know, the other thing is look for your inner circle of executives and stakeholders who on the team can help bring ideas and solutions to the table. Mm-hmm. They're there. They have the vested interest to ensure that that they preserve or protect the entity. And so they also are in it to win it. So when you get into the middle of a circle or dogfight, you've got to bring in the strengths that you have on the team. And if you find that you don't have that strength on the team, mm-hmm. you've got to go out and get it. And mm-hmm. so businesses need to understand that there is help out there, no matter how big or small that you are. And no matter if you're attacking a process or you're attacking a complete reorganization of the entity or the direction that you're heading. Or maybe you're just needing to establish a go-to-market strategy for a product that you're wanting to launch. Doesn't always have to be problems, right? But living in the gap creates lots of success on the other end. And so just understanding that there are solutions, Adam.
What is the kind of the sweet spot for you and your team, like in terms of size of company, or and also maybe it's industry, or maybe are you industry agnostic? Like, give us a feel for that.
Adam, we are Digital Fusion Consulting Group is industry agnostic. That's probably the best way to put it. So great term. We do really well with companies that are going through a stage of metamorphosis, right? Mm. So when you're going from a caterpillar to a butterfly, that's where we step in. Whether you're a $50 million a year company, $100 million, $200 million, what I've learned in my history is that when you hit about $250 million, you become bite-sized for the larger companies. And either they allow you to continue to foster what you have and you are going to organically grow that entity, typically you're starting to take market share at about $250 million. So you become an appetite for someone else that wants to grow through attrition. And so larger companies will go in and look at what would be considered a larger fish. And then they look for the smaller fish to go in and gobble up. Mm-hmm. So that $250 million a year mark is another turning point. And it's typically the largest turning point from the small and pop that grew organically to that level. That's getting ready to go to the big league under a department of something larger. So that's kind of what we focus in is the companies that are going through that level or state of metamorphosis that need help to understand what the bigger game looks like. We've played with small pops. We've played with and helped organizations that are in business that operate with 10 million. We've played with operations that operate in the billions. And so that it's really, really imperative that everybody understands that the same game you play to get you to the first grade is not the same game you'll play to get you the PhD.
Yeah. At that 250 million kind of mark, when they're a potential acquisition target, what are some of the things that they're like some of the challenges that a company maybe is sometimes facing at that level?
Standardization, Adam, that's a great question. And it immediately goes into the level of standardization, right? So we can pick one of many, many topics. Standardization is first to come to mind. Why do you want standardization? Because that's where you get your scalability. You can test your theory whether or not you've got a great success story by standardizing. You're going to have improved efficiencies immediately by standardizing, which obviously makes you more attractive. It improves your bottom line. The consistency and quality is absolutely important to their customer. So if you have if they have their customer in focus, then the gaps immediately come to light, and you address them so that customers understand that you have them in mind. Training and onboarding. Wow. You don't get that right, you've got problems. So you've got to be able to standardize kind of what that looks like. And, you know, there's tactical details to all of this that we can't get into, you know, in this one conversation, Adam. But, you know, that's top level. Continuous improvement, right? If you standardize, you've got that in focus. Again, living in the gap, that never stops. Any organization that's, you know, to make money, which even the nonprofits are in it to at least, you know, supply and supplement, you know, what their focus is. So continuous improvement is a must. Risk reduction and compliance, right? If you don't have that in focus, you're not mitigating risk. It puts you in harm's way. And then understanding how to collaborate and communicate with your team, your stakeholders, your customers. Ultimately, you want to standardize to improve efficiencies in the bottom line. But ultimately, you're also looking for that that scalability in your organization.
And standardizing doesn't mean like diluting. Standardizing means getting them ready for the next level of growth, right?
Absolutely. So what you're constantly doing is you're constantly putting standardization in check in under the umbrella of continuous improvement. Nothing that you do in business remains static unless it's an absolute foundational pillar that is holding up your business. Everything else is subject to change. And then what happens when the next pandemic hits? How do you adjust? Are you prepared for that? You know, what if you have a disaster in a security breach? What if a Mother Nature takes its way and, you know, God forbid, tornado takes you out? How do you overcome these things? If you're not addressing those, you know, at any size, then you've got to be asking yourself, you know, am I putting myself at risk?
This is great. And I want to spend a little bit of time here today, Arthur. As I mentioned before, we're not going to do a deep dive today because we'll be bringing you back onto the show to talk about the upcoming book, but maybe keeping it high level today. Tell us a little bit more about what you plan to present in the upcoming book.
You know, the idea is to present more business strategies, Adam, and to unlock success for our clients. Mastering the Art of Gap Closing is one of the titles of one of the chapters. And so I won't give it all away, but, you know, developing a culture of continuous improvement is going to be part of what we're focusing on, you know, establishing notoriety of the knowledge that we bring to the table, and then creating expression that's derived on real life experiences and not theories or concepts, and then impact and influence without giving too much information, Adam. That's kind of what we're focused on.
I was gonna have to cut you off there, man. We do sell books here. We do sell books. Don't worry. When it's out, we're bringing you back on, and we'll have the link nice and neat in the show notes so people can pick up a copy. Awesome. Well, Arthur, really, it has been. I'm glad we finally got to do this. It's been great having you on the show. Love what you're doing, and I just have to ask. I mean, what's next? What's next for you? What's next for your company?
You know, what's next for us is continuing to grow what we did. You know, we've recently gone through a rebranding, and so we're stepping into that realm. Our idea is to continue to grow in our space and to help companies do what they do best. You can find more information about us, Adam, at www.digitalfusionconsultingsingular.group. So it's www.digitalfusionconsultinggroup.com. And there's we'll have this video on there. I think is kind of what the goal is as well. So we'll continue with information and reference material for help.
By the way, for everybody watching, we'll put all that in the show notes so that you can just click on the link and head right on over and check out Arthur and his team. And speaking of the audience, if this is your first time with Mission Matters or engaging in an episode, we're all about bringing on business owners, entrepreneurs, and executives and having them share their mission, the reason behind their mission, you know, what gets them motivated and fired up in the morning to go out there in the world and make a difference. If that's the type of content that sounds interesting or fun or exciting to you, we welcome you. Hit that subscribe button. We have many more mission-based individuals coming up, and we don't want you to miss a thing. Arthur, really, it has been a pleasure. Thanks again for coming on the show. Can't wait to the next time we get to do this.
Adam, pleasure has been mine. Thank you. Be blessed.